You're listening to Rust Belt Run.
Running is what makes me realize that, like, I'm a human being who is worth something.
That is not a good measurement of my value as a human.
We get between 8 and 10,000 additional comments, and I read every one of them.
So you had to run Sand Run for your first. You become race director and take it out.
it's got to be old guy naked in the locker room.
I get to spend time with my friend Adam. I get to do something with my friend.
Right now, I'm not thinking much beyond what I'm going to be drinking next week at this time.
Coleslaw on a taco is not taco, it's barbecue.
And so we'll be discussing tonight with some occasional swear words from Andrew because he's upset, and that's okay.
I know him as the biggest Kid Rock fan around.
You rap that.
Oh, dear God.
You're listening to Rust Belt Running. I'm Adam Wheeler. You can find me on social media at Wheels Up in CLE. Joined as I always am by Andrew Hettinger. You can find him on social media at Andrew Runs a Lot. If you want to find the podcast on social media, you can find us at Rust Belt Running.
Before we go any further, let's take a quick break to tell you a little bit about what we do with run coaching. Adam, why don't you tell us about it?
It's personalized run coaching. It takes into account the schedule that you have to get your runs in, the goals that you have, as well as the base that you come to us with. You talk to us about what it is you want to be doing, the time that you have to do it, and we come up with a personalized plan that fits your needs, works on you towards your goals, and helps provide a bird's eye view on your training to make sure that you don't plateau, to make sure that you're doing the correct training that's appropriate for you, and to get you showing up on race day confidence that you're going to be ready to hit your race goals.
So to learn more about how we can help you hit your race goals, go to rustbeltrunning.com. There you can find out about our different levels and coaching, find out more about us as runners and coaches, or you can support the show with buying merch, a sweatshirt, a patch that you can iron on to your singlet for that race that you're running soon. Maybe you don't want people knowing that you listen to us, but regardless, support the show. But for now, sit back and enjoy the rest of this episode.
Andrew, so you've had a week. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah?
How about you?
You know, I had a little bit of post-race depression early in the week. Kind of that, holy shit, really big things done. What do I do now? And, on top of not running, being out of my routine, but I've gotten through that and back to feeling pretty good.
Well, good. Good. Have you run yet? Or
no. I think I'm gonna take one more week off. I'm gonna get back to some light strength training this week.
There you go.
Yeah, we're gonna talk more about like when things suck and like what to do after a peak race here as we talk during the show. But one of my big goals is to really kind of go back to basics with strength training and build a more stable foundation. So that's gonna start Monday.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something we try to preach with our athletes,
yeah.
But I know I'm not always the best at practicing.
Same.
So,
same.
I told you I was going to tell a funny story from soccer.
Please.
Today. So we had soccer this morning. Mm-hmm. Well, first we had soccer on Tuesday, and it was against Maslin, and that was a disaster. And I cannot stand. Okay, I have no like real affiliation tie or desire to be into these rivalries in Northeast Ohio townships and school football, whatever. But I hate Maslin with a passion.
Pawnee Eagleton.
They they stack their rec league soccer and don't do travel. They have one team apparently that is awful, and then the other two teams are just loaded with Chris Bosches, and it is just unreal. But that's not what the story is about today. That was Tuesday. I sent an angry email. I was that dad. But today it was our turn to bring snacks.
Okay.
And
I remember those days.
So last night I went to Aldi and I bought some body armor. And then I bought the Clancy's brand potato chips, like the mixed bag, like the big bag of little bags. And then I bought like a 12 pack of chocolate Aldi brand Golden Grahams.
Yeah.
Or not Golden Grahams, but the little bears, little Graham bear things, whatever the hell they're called. So So I have three things. I have body armor, these chocolate bear, Graham bear things, and the potato chips. And apparently somebody, like I live in Perry Township in Canton. Apparently somebody was like, my wife told me this. Somebody said, what do they think this is? Jackson Township? Like, because I brought three snacks? Like, what? Like... it's like if somebody from Pawnee got confused and, you know, I don't know. I just thought it was funny. Like, what is this, Jackson? Like, yeah. And then we got into our BMW and we left.
That you paid cash for, right?
Yeah, paid cash for that BMW. That's how I buy my Beamers, is I buy them in cash. We don't have to talk about what year it is and how many miles are on
it. Nope, unimportant. It's a BMW.
Or how I got the money.
That's
but yeah,
all that matters.
Cash. Oh, shit. The funny thing was, like, the next week after that comment that I bought my BMW cash, this was when egg prices were really high.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it was specific eggs. It wasn't all eggs.
Yeah.
Brittany and I have always bought, like brown eggs, and we try to buy like organic brown eggs, mm-hmm. and, you know, humanely raised brown eggs. They taste better. And then like the egg industry is just fucking garbage. So we try to stay away from, you know, like the terrible, treatment of animals as best we can.
Yeah.
So we buy these, and we were on this run, and, Nate Perez is talking about the price of eggs, and, you know, he's like, it's unbelievable that I'm paying like $5.50, $6 for a dozen eggs. And I was like, dude, we've always bought like organic brown eggs. I'm used to spending $5, $6, $7 on a dozen eggs.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how rich do I sound? I'm here. I buy a BMW cash. I've always spent $7 on a dozen eggs. Like, if you've seen my house, you know, I don't have money. Like, I don't. And it's just funny.
This is reminding me of the, there's a video that you always see floating around the internet. It's only like 5 seconds long, but it's a guy getting into the back of his gold car. And as he's getting into his car, he hits a button. He doesn't actually push or like pull the door to close it. He hits a button that slowly closes the door, and he's just laughing at the camera as he ducks in.
Yeah.
That's you, buddy.
Yeah, that's me. That's me with my BMW and my organic brown eggs. Yep. I buy the Aldi organic brown eggs. So, I'm Aldi rich. That's what it is. I'm Aldi rich. So
I'm Aldi rich. Me not being from Canton makes it hard for me to completely square the whole Jackson Township, Perry Township thing. But other than that, the Aldi rich, that drove the point home.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about some, you brought up, we were going to talk about a little bit of disappointment. When we recorded last week, I didn't want to talk about Glass City because I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about it after the, like, this was before the race.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about it after, because we don't know what's going to happen. Well, turned out it wasn't my day. I kind of knew even before I left that it wasn't going to be my day. Like, I did not, I walked out, I had my bags and everything in the car, and, Toledo's about a 2.5 hour drive.
Right.
And I looked at my car and I was like, I don't want to go to Toledo today. Mm-hmm. I seriously stood in my front yard for like 5 minutes, and I was just like, I do not want to travel again. Like, I just want to lay in my own bed, mm-hmm. and I don't want to drive to Toledo.
Yeah.
When I got to Toledo, finally, I got a little more excited. I hung out at my friend's house. Very thankful and grateful to the Hunts for letting me stay with them and for making me pasta. And I had a good time hanging out. But when I woke up that next morning, I wasn't like real excited. But sometimes I am that way when it comes to race day.
Yeah.
I kind of get up and, there's some unease because it's like, all right, there's no more thinking about how good this can go. It's about time to really put it to the test.
Yeah.
And there can be some anxiety around that. Well, it still just felt different. Mm-hmm. I got to the start. The start was a little bit of a, actually the race was fairly well organized. I just had an issue with the gear check. Mm-hmm. And I had an issue with the communication around parking.
Okay.
Those were the only two things I really had an issue with in this race. Mm-hmm. But once I was finally able to find gear check to drop my bag, I ended up parking hella far away. I didn't have to. I just took the first parking I could find.
Yeah.
And then I ended up walking through a bunch of empty parking spaces. And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I wish I'd have known. Like, but you guys, it was just weird. But neither here nor there. I started to get a little bit excited, but it was, I don't know. I just still never really felt like a race day. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, as I kind of piece back, I really do feel it was like just, I was exhausted.
Yeah.
I was just emotionally and physically exhausted from the week of Boston. Even like recording the morning that I left was part of it. You know, I mean, that was one of the more emotional episodes we've recorded
yes.
since like the pandemic began.
Yes.
To put that episode together and, talk about that and relive all the fun from the week of Boston, and then to have to settle up in my car and drive 2.5 hours on the extremely exciting Ohio Turnpike. It was not going to be my day. And I started out where I wanted to, there was a pace group for where I wanted to be.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, cool. At least I don't have to think today. I can just kind of get up with them. And I started with them and started off fine. Legs felt good. That was never really my issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Chris Gutierrez right after the start. He was there 100 yards into the race. And so saw him and, felt good right off the rip. I was like, okay, maybe this will be all right. I knew I was on emotional overload, but I was like, maybe I can kind of get through it. And
yeah,
stuck with that pace group for the first 5K. And then I just knew, I was like, nah, this ain't gonna happen. So I kind of let them go, and I wasn't upset with the decision. I mean, that was my plan all along. My number was the tip top of my ability. So I knew that the chances of me hitting that were, I don't want to say slim, but if there was any missteps, I wasn't going to hit it.
Yeah.
So I needed to make a call early. And so I did that. And, I just couldn't hold on to anything. Like just everything just felt off. And I was a little nauseous, which was weird. I'm not sure what that's related to. I'm not sure if I didn't fuel right in my lack of excitement for the race.
Yeah, could have been.
And, also like your body, I mean, I traveled a lot over a week. And then I went right back to work. So, it was just, it was just not, none of it was ideal. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not upset with myself. I'm not upset. I mean, I'm not happy. I'm upset with the result. I'm upset with what happened that day. I put training in to run a 125 and I didn't come close to hitting it. But I also, have the, ability to kind of compartmentalize and understand that there are reasons why I wasn't there that day.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'm really proud of with myself is that I never really let myself get too down in the middle of the race. And there were a bunch of moments where I tried to kind of get it back. And some of that was when a certain group would pass me.
Yeah.
So I mentioned I wanted to run 125. So that's the group I started with. And about mile eight, the 130 group caught me.
Okay.
And that was not my favorite moment of the race. But, you know, they caught me, they passed me, and then I kind of started to feel like maybe I could get a little something. So I kept them in my sights, and then I was like, hey, let's maybe try to charge after them.
Yeah.
And if you can catch them by 10, maybe you can beast out a good 5K and turn this into a 5K race and still go snag a PR and break 129. So I kept, you know, that my spirits were, despite how shit I felt, my spirits were still high enough and I was still in a good enough place mentally to be making these audibles that included a, you know, hold on to that group and try to surge. It only lasted for about 20 seconds before I'd be like, no, this ain't going to work. Mm-hmm. But I was happy that I was at least able to try to get there. And then it was just really, I mean, it really became a slog to just finish. And I just kept, you know, I mentioned I was running for my friend Aaron. I just kept saying out loud, finish for Aaron.
Yeah.
Like, without that, I would have pulled off a med tent and DNF'd because I just really did not want to be there.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that was kind of that experience. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to talk about it. I do have one funny thing to say. So there was an inside joke between me and Nate. And it included something happening in Toledo on Saturday.
Okay.
Which I can't talk about that. I can't talk about the inside joke, but
that's fine.
I mentioned that it didn't happen. And I texted him that before I left for the race. Well, he responded to that with the sentence, waste of a trip. Well, when I got to my phone for the first time after the race, that was the first message preview on my lock screen. It just said waste of a trip.
Damn.
And I was like, this dick. Like, I know we like bust each other's balls, but how are you gonna send that to somebody after a bad race? Like, waste of a trip, dude. And then I tapped on it and I saw what I sent him at like 6 a.m. and I was like, oh, okay. That's right. I remember.
That's so funny because when I got done with Boston, I talked about this last week. When I got done at Boston, I had turned my phone off because I knew that my phone was going to be blowing up and I didn't want to lose battery life while I was away from it for like 7 hours. One of the first text messages I saw was you guys talking about my really slow early pace. Just like, dude, what the hell is he doing? I'm like, guys, you don't understand. And then I kept reading through, like, all right, now they picked up on what's going on. But like, that was one of the first things I saw. Like, you don't understand. I'm surrounded by thousands of people. There's nowhere to go. Oh, that's great.
Oh man, out of context.
Yes,
texts are great. So one person I saw right before I saw what I thought was like the most asshole text of all time was, again, I saw Chris Gutierrez.
Yeah,
and I saw him as I was coming into the finish and I just looked at him. I kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, not my day, dude, not my day. I saw him after I exited the glass bowl and we were talking and we were just kind of talking about what happened. And that's all I said. Not my day.
Like, yeah.
I kind of understood. I had 10 miles of bargaining with myself as to why it wasn't my day.
Yeah.
That puts you in a dark place for a long time.
It's a long time.
It wasn't like, you know, I hit it at mile 8 and I had to go through 5 miles. Yeah. I mean, I went through most of the race having to go, this is going to be a long day. Mm-hmm. And it was. But yeah, I got to see Chris, and he told me about the results from London, which were wild.
Yes. Second fastest marathon ever.
Yeah. And Stefan Hassan's stop and surge and final kick to win her first marathon.
Yeah.
She might be the most dominant runner of all time. But it was good to see somebody, like, to see a familiar face. And, he mentioned to me that he felt, you know, he was like super proud of me for not like being too down after a day that wasn't my own. And I'm like, okay, I guess I really wasn't down. Like, somebody saw that. Like, yeah. I was able to just sit there and, you know, I've been down after a bad race, mm-hmm. and it can ruin it for you.
Yeah.
Like, it can ruin running. I've been there. Like, I had to train myself to be happy just running again.
Yeah.
After the 2016 Columbus Marathon. And, I'm trying to understand why I was in that mindset. I think a lot of it is because of a lot of the conversations you and I have had over the years. I think, you know, in talking with people like Mark Freeman and, you know, bringing up a lot of the wisdom of Brad Stolberg and Steve Magnus, over the years, I think I was just able to be in a good spot, even though, that race didn't go my way. That's right. Why I was willing to talk about it today.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is a topic we can discuss. Because, you know, we're coming up on races. Some people have races in their rear view and maybe they aren't the results they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have an athlete who has kind of been going through some ups and downs over the past couple of months, mm-hmm. after a really, really big fall.
Yeah.
And, maybe not enough time off. And, you know, it's the spring's not been the best. And so it's like, how do you mentally, kind of recover from, you know, a result you don't want? Like, you train for weeks and months for one period of time,
yeah.
that can, if off by 5 minutes, can be the difference between like extreme jubilation and massive disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about that. 5 minutes.
Oh, I've lived it.
Is like 6.5 minutes is my difference between my goal and my finish time.
Mm-hmm.
And I trained for 14 weeks to get there.
Yeah.
And it all came down to that small amount of time over 13.1 miles. And so, yeah, I think it's like, us runners live on the edge of a knife in everything we do.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a good, I'm trying to get to the launching point to like pass this off to you, and I can't find the end. So I'm just going to say, like, what are some of your kind of thoughts on this scenario?
So when you talked about, you know, not being down after the race this time around, and how you really dealt with it in 2016 after Columbus, we've certainly talked about the race that I had a couple of years ago, the Towpath Marathon, where I got hurt 2 weeks out, mm-hmm. really and unexpectedly, just completely out of nowhere. And, that was a race I had really big goals for, really had high hopes that was going to get me into the 2022 Boston Marathon. And when I got done with that race, that had just been a tough year for me just in general. And that was just kind of like the cherry on top of just what had been kind of a shitty 6 months or so. And I was in a pretty dark place for a couple of weeks. You know, you've talked before about how I kind of rebounded and got going after that. But I spent about 2 weeks in a pretty just dark place, just about. And it wasn't even just about the running. It was just kind of everything coming together. And I had to kind of dig myself out of it. I actually sat down and wrote out. I listened to a podcast with a surfer named Carissa Moore. And she talked about, she's an Olympic gold medalist in surfing. And she talked about how she had to take, she phrased it like taking responsibility for like her own psychological framework in terms of competing. And it was something that like kind of her coaches had always fed it to her before, but she felt a need to kind of take it on herself. And I actually spent time just thinking about like, you know, when I'm at my best, what am I doing? You know, yeah. Where are the scenarios where I'm doing that? Where are the scenarios that I'm not? You know, and then when I met my worst, what am I doing? And I was thinking about how I was just kind of wallowing in this bad moment. And I had to think about, like, how can I take those things that I do best and apply to the situation? Because sitting here and wallowing isn't doing anything for me. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not growing. Like, I'm just sitting here feeling sorry for myself, and no actual, like, progress is happening after this. You know, so I finally, it took me a couple weeks, but that, like, was kind of the beginning of my clawing my way out of that. And, you know, it makes me think of something that Brad Stahlberg, you talk about Brad and Steve, that they talk about. They talk about, they call it the 24-hour rule. It really doesn't matter how long it is, but it's essentially this, this period of time that you agree to take, whether you're celebrating a good thing or mourning a bad thing, and saying, like, listen, there's going to be emotions around those things. Allow yourself to experience them. It isn't like you need to just bury your emotions and pretend they're not there, but you give yourself a predetermined amount of time, if needed, to experience those emotions. And then you say, okay, that's done. Move on to the next thing. Because ultimately you're not doing anything worthwhile if you're just going to sit there and wallow in your misery, or if you're going to sit there and bask in the glow of an accomplishment and just never pick up and move beyond it. You know, so you, what's nice is it sounds like you pretty quickly were able to turn the page on a bad race, and start moving beyond that and start processing that. And, you know, it's great if that's the case. And if it takes longer for people, that's okay. But there needs to be that acknowledgement that, like, once you've started to deal with those negative emotions, it's then time to kind of pick up and say, okay, like, how do I process this? How do I move on? And, you know, when I've done it in the past, what I've tried to remember is that, you know, you had a really pretty solid training cycle leading up to this. You had a big goal for Toledo, and that big goal was justified based on the training that you were doing. I mean, hell, you had a track session this past week that kind of showed, like, no, that fitness is there. And I know in the past when I've had some bad races, you know, what I try to do is not let that bad race skew my view of the overall training that went into it. Now, if the training was bad and there's things I need to reflect on, then yeah, reflect on it and, you know, rebuild a better wall. Something you talked about last week in a reel that you put on our account. But if the training was good, sometimes the race is just bad. I think my second half marathon in Cleveland, I got really, really sick, like really bad, something with my stomach 2 or 3 days before the race. So I was really unable to eat much. I wasn't able to really sleep much because I would get like really bad, like nighttime stomach pain. You know, so not a lot of eating, not a lot of sleeping before race, all really, really bad stuff. And then that race day happened to be something like 80 degrees with just clear blue skies, sun beating right down on you. It was a recipe for just a brutal race. And I think to this day, it's still my slowest half marathon. And I felt really bad. And this was really early in my running career where I didn't really know how to handle these things. And so for a couple of weeks, I was like, Jesus, what, do I even know what I'm doing? And then I stopped and was like, dude, your training was solid. The training was good. It was more consistent than it was last year. It was just a bad day. And I was able to take that mentality and roll that into, I think, like a 133 half marathon in the fall. So it's important not to let the emotion of that moment cloud the bigger picture of, you know, what was the process like? And was the process good for you? And if it was, and it just didn't manifest itself into a good race, that's just kind of running. But you're right. Like, we do live on kind of a knife's edge. We only get so many bites at the apple in a year. And when one of them doesn't go well, Christ, that sucks.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it's like, so I want to be very clear. I am not happy.
Yeah. Like, nor should you be.
Like, I'm good. Like, that's kind of, I think that's what I kept saying in my Instagram captions is like, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Not happy.
Nope.
But I'm good. Like, I worked hard. My wall was like my wall was built.
Yeah.
And it was built well. Mm-hmm. And it was just like I didn't let the mortar set.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's there was just too much going on. And it's, you know, we always say, you know, you can have a bad race for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
When I put in that track workout on this past Wednesday, which I went out pretty easy. The first few, I just wanted to snap some 400s, see what my legs had.
Yeah.
But when I did, when I rocked a 71 last 400, I was like, yeah, I think I didn't go in overtrained. Yeah. And then the next day I was pissed off at a bunch of shit. So I went out and ran what I call a hate run and, you know, just ran whatever I wanted to. And my last mile was 6:25. I'm like, and I felt like I was doing nothing. I was just taking out all my frustration on asphalt. And, you know, I didn't go in overtrained and there was nothing like that. It just, you know, we always talk about sometimes it's just not your day.
Yeah.
There it is. Like it just, it's just not. So there's a really good example of a professional athlete that we can talk about that's very recent too. And that's Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, what a great video that was.
The Milwaukee Bucks were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and they were eliminated by the Miami Heat because Jimmy Butler found a time machine.
Yeah.
And but Giannis had some, you know, was asked if this season was a failure. And I love his response. And I think it's something that's really relevant to us as runners when a race doesn't go the way we want it to go. So this was his response to the question of was this year a failure? He said, and I quote, do you get a promotion every year in your job? No, right? So every year you work is a failure, yes or no? No, every year you work towards something, towards a goal, which is to get a promotion, to be able to take care of your family, provide a house for them, or take care of your parents. You work towards a goal. It's not a failure. It's steps to success. There's always steps to it. Michael Jordan played 15 years, won 6 championships. The other 9 years was a failure. That's what you're telling me? End quote.
Yeah.
Was Sunday a failure for me? No. It was a hell of a workout. and it was a hell of a mental workout too. Again, like I had to fight through 10 miles of that. You mean to tell me that's not going to come in handy for me during maybe Erie or Chicago or Columbus when I do those fulls this year? You think I'm not going to have 10 miles that I go, man, this fucking sucks. But I know that I can, you know, find ways to keep myself engaged. I know that I can fight through it because I just did it. Even if it sucks and it's not the day I want, I can still medal grab.
I had a similar sort of thought about how those bad moments that you're going through at the time feel just absolutely awful, but how they can lead to unexpected payoffs down the road. And I had that realization. I think it was about 2 weeks out of Boston. You know, last year Pittsburgh training was really, really difficult because the spring, air quotes, spring to train through was just brutal with winter. I really didn't have a lot of weeks that I could run the way that I wanted to. And it was so cold, it was really hard to get an idea if I was capable of hitting the paces that I wanted to. And then, you know, I got 6-7 weeks out before the race and missed a weekend of training. I had a small issue with my TFL that caused some leg pain that caused me to miss some training late in the cycle. And so, you know, when I went to Pittsburgh last year, I felt good about the race I was going to run, but I didn't fully have a great understanding of what I was maybe capable of. And then I went out and I ran a PR and a BQ on a really, really tough course because I had overall done some solid training. I just didn't necessarily hit there with the training that I wanted to hit. And so, you know, that gave me a level of confidence about, you know, training doesn't have to be perfect. Good training isn't perfect training. It's just consistent training, getting in as much as you can. And so when I went through the really kind of tough last 7 weeks of my Boston cycle this time around, I didn't freak out as much about it as I might have otherwise, because I had that similar experience from a year ago that told me that if you just keep putting bricks down and doing as best as you can, you don't quite know what you're capable of, but you know that you've got a reserve of fitness that you can draw on that's going to get you through. And it really had a calming effect on me this year, because this was obviously Boston was a big race for me. And, you know, you knew beforehand that I really wanted to race that course and not just enjoy the course. And it ended up obviously paying off, but it led me to be so much more grateful for what I went through last year, because it would have otherwise, I think, really screwed with my mind this year. And you're absolutely right. Like, every runner is going to have tough moments. If you're not having any tough moments, you're honestly not aiming high enough for your goals. Right. And if your goal is just to enjoy running and have fun and not really care about time, then that might happen. And that's fine. But when you start chasing after time goals and pushing your performance abilities a bit, you're going to have some dark times because you're riding a line between, you know, doing enough and doing a little too much. That's just kind of the nature of chasing goals. Yep. And, you know, part of that means you're going to encounter tough times, and doing that allows you to better prepare how to handle them next time. Because yeah, you're probably going to hit a stretch in Erie when you're chasing a hopeful BQ where your mind's going, dude, I don't know if you got it today. And you're going to have the Toledo experience to draw back on and say like, no, I've dealt with this. It's going to be shitty. Right. It's not going to be fun, but I've dealt with this before and I know I can handle it.
So I guess like here, we're talking a lot about our own experiences, and I can pat myself on the back for handling Glass City so well. But that's not necessarily practical advice for somebody who's listening to this.
Yeah.
You know, we can say, oh, look at what Giannis thinks.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. We can give all these examples of what healthy thought in the midst of, you know, a bad event can feel like. But what's like maybe some tools and like honest practices that you have for people who didn't have the result they want?
Are we talking in the actual moment of the performance? Or are we talking on reflection?
You pick. Dealer's okay. Choice. I guess I was the dealer. So yeah, let's go in the moment. Let's kind of break this down. We got two parts to talk about. Like in the moment, what's, you know, maybe some tools. Like you're in that moment. You're where I was at Glass City. What's some of the tools you implement?
This is a tool that I learned from Scott Faubel in his book about his training for the New York Marathon in 2018. One of those. He repeats a mantra to himself anytime he starts thinking really, really good thoughts or really, really bad thoughts, basically anything that takes him out of the moment. He says to himself, that's just thinking, let it flow. Because yeah. It can be really easy to go into a race with a plan and start out really, really good and feel great and be like, oh my God, maybe I should push harder. And maybe you start pushing into areas that you're not ready for. You know, it's important to come back to the training that you've done and recognize the training that you've done and say like, no, I had a plan, stick with it. That's just thinking, let it flow. And if you get into bad moments in a race, recognizing that just because you're thinking bad thoughts doesn't mean that those thoughts are real. You're not a failure. You're not going through a doom spiral. Your race isn't necessarily going to blow up because sometimes, you know, you talked about with your race in Toledo, you tried a lot of different moves and just none of them worked. Mm-hmm. You and I have both had races as well where we've tried a move and it doesn't work at the moment, but then we kind of get through the wall and then 3 miles down the road, we feel great again. And yeah. So it's important to take a bad thought when something starts to go wrong and not let it derail your entire race, because you can let it derail your entire race and just kind of spin out of control. Sometimes races, just like life, have bad moments that you need to break through. And one bad moment doesn't equal an entire like bad race, a bad week, a bad month. And so getting back to that, like it's just thinking, let it flow. You're feeling bad right now. Okay, I'm feeling bad right now. I don't need to be thinking about feeling bad 3 miles from now, and just kind of see how it plays out. And that's scary because there's a lack of control you have when you're not going to like try to plan everything out going forward, but it's that ability to stay in the moment that allows you to not let that moment become more than it is.
So yeah, when I think back to our Columbus recap, mm-hmm. I talk about how at mile 20-ish, was when I started to feel it, the hill up Woody Hayes.
Yeah.
That was when that made my hips hurt. That hill made my hips hurt for days.
Yeah.
And, that was the moment. That was the moment that I really felt like shit that day. And, it was the only time I felt like shit that day, but what I said, I let myself feel that. Mm-hmm. I let myself live in that moment of feeling like crap, instead of trying to talk myself out of feeling like crap. Cause that's when the spiral begins when you try to Goggins your way through it. You know, I let myself go, man, yeah, this is where it's hard. Yeah. This is hard right now. And I think that's kind of what you just touched on. It's like, it'll maybe a little more eloquently said than me just saying, I let myself feel that way. So yeah, I think there's a lot of value in letting yourself feel. I think you can understand your body more. I think you can understand your mind and how your brain is working and your emotions in a moment if you just let yourself feel that way. It can be hard not to let that slip into a doom spiral, but I think it's easier to not slip into a doom spiral when you go, yep, I don't feel great.
And that,
then when you try to fight it,
that, you know, what you just talked about, letting your body feel, that really is a skill that people need to practice more. And we probably talked about this a little bit with our technology episode, but it's really easy to get really sucked into wanting to perfect your splits. Like, oh, I'm supposed to be running a 7:30 mile. And, you know, 7:30 mile is going to feel different on different days, depending on what's going on in your life and what's going on in your training. And I think that's why it's important to learn to run a little bit by feel. And whether that's not wearing a watch at all, or whether that's, you know, just wearing it but not really looking at the splits until later. I listened to an interview yesterday that Scott Fobble did talking about Boston. He admitted that he doesn't run a watch on his races anymore because he doesn't have a watch deal.
I noticed that. Yeah. I noticed that he wasn't wearing one.
Yeah, and so he was talking about the early miles in Boston. And, you know, from his previous experience where runners tend to go out running about a 103 half marathon pace for the first half. And I forget what that came out. I forget what that comes out to, a per mile pace. But the first early mile pace was much faster. Elliot set a much faster pace. And he said when he went through the first mile, he saw the clock on the course and it showed like a 4:40. And he looked at CJ Albertson and he said, is that right? And CJ looked at his watch and said, yep, that's right. And Scott went, well, no, okay, I guess it's right. And what's important there, though, is that he went in with a plan. Scott Fobble is a guy who knows his ability, knows what he can do and knows what he can't do. And he said, well, I know I can't run 4:40. So I just went, all right, well, not going to worry about that. Those guys can go ahead. And if it means I can't catch any of them on that day, well, then I can't catch them. And if it means that they blow up and I'm able to, fantastic. But that's running by feel. He did. Yeah. It took until very, very late in the race, but he did. That ability to run by feel. And I think to trust your feel is really important. And that's a trainable skill. And, you know, so that's one of those things when it happens in a race and you do what you explained, just let your body feel it. That's an important thing to do because you're going to hit moments like that in a race where you do need just to let your, where you need to just let your body feel whatever it's feeling and make decisions based on that.
Right. So that was kind of like the in the moment, like when things are rough in the moment. Now let's move to kind of after the fact. You brought up what Brad and Steve, the 24-hour rule.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, let yourself feel.
Yeah.
Like, you have to grieve results that aren't what you want. And it can be easy to put on a brave face and, you know, try to, you know, act like it's not a big deal. That's not maybe, that's not going to be a healthy way to handle things.
No.
But let yourself feel, I mean, let yourself be pissed, let yourself be like, it's not fair. Like it's not fair that it's not your day, but somebody else's.
Yeah.
Somebody else gets to have fun. Like I saw, I mean, just person after person on Sunday, BQ, just saw all over Instagram. I'm like, all these motherfuckers get to BQ and I wanted to drop. Like, and my training was good. I'm in shape. I'm not hurt. I'm not overtrained because I'm going out and blasting 71 400s 3 days later. Like, this isn't fair.
Yeah.
Like, I'm mad about it. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Like, no. We put in a ton of work.
Like, you should let yourself be upset. And like, understand that those feelings are rational and they're feelings. Like, but how do you handle the feelings is going to be the difference. And I think we tend to lean to extremes on this, which is I'm either going to throw my hands in the air and give up, which was me after 2016 Columbus.
Right.
Or I'm going to lean too far into it and you're going to end up doing something stupid on the other extreme. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example, but, you know, end up overtraining for your next race,
right?
Or, you know, jumping right back into things, before you're really ready to. And I think that that is, you know, I think the right answer, as it is for almost any question in running, is going to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Like giving yourself grace and time to process it and to feel angry before stepping back, whether that be 24 hours or 48. In my case, I needed to come home and lay in bed.
Yeah.
Like that's what I needed. I laid down for like 3 hours. I was just fucking exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, that was good. And I woke up and I'm like, all right, what's next? You know, yep. Not in a, I lost my train of thought, but whatever.
I had a couple things that I wanted to say in response to that, the whole, like how it's not fair. And there's the two extremes that people tend to go to, you know, as far as the not fair thing goes. I finished Des Linden's memoir last week. And one of the things that she talks about in that book is how running is not fair. Because if running was fair, everybody puts in work. Everybody puts in the mm-hmm. work to get to the start line and to try to win a race. And she said, listen, if running was fair, the podium would be crowded. Because everybody would get mm-hmm. what they actually deserve. And it's just, you know, they're professional runners. Everybody's trying to beat everybody else. Everybody's doing the same training. And it's just on race day, things happen, and training things happen. And it, you know, fairness really isn't part of the equation, unfortunately. And I think it's right. why having that kind of longer view of things is so important, because you can throw down a couple of really solid years of training and have one really, really good race in there, have one really, really bad race, couple of like pretty good races where it's like you hit maybe a B goal or a C goal, but you don't hit the A goal. And the important thing is that when you look back, you've got 2 years of consistent training, and the consistent training puts you in the ballpark to chase maybe the big A goal, you know. But again, if you're hitting your A goals every single time, you're not aiming high enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what you want, that's fine. But if chasing goals and really pushing yourself to some limits is what you're trying to do, then you shouldn't be hitting them all the time because you're not aiming high enough. So that was right. point number one. And then point number two, about looking at the two extremes, you know, something I talked about, I put a reel out on this the other day. I think if you are the type of runner that maybe peaks for like one or two races a year, like you do a spring cycle, a fall cycle, I think it's really important to sit down at some point and do just kind of a post-mortem on how that training cycle and race went. Because there's going to be good, there's going to be bad, and there's going to be ugly. You know, the worst race is going to have some really positive things, and the best race is going to have some negative things that happened. And I think just being brutally honest about what went well and what didn't go well and the little areas where you can improve is really, really important, because that's where you'll start to find room to grow as a runner. And I think it's a way to respond so that if you do have a bad race, you don't go through the whole like wallowing in misery, because setting out some tangible things you can start trying to chase to be better at gives you a path forward. You know, the yeah. Mark Freeman idea of like, you know, identify your values and then follow through on actions to chase those values. And the ability to be brutally honest about what went well and what didn't go well allows you to, I think, have a clearer picture so that you don't try to go out and overtrain and do too much the next cycle. And, you know, I'll give an example here that I found to be the case with my Boston training. After I had the injury in 2021 that derailed my fall marathon, I had an email exchange back and forth with my physical therapist, Tim Pavlak. And he said, you know, like, listen, man, like you started coming to me this spring with some pretty significant imbalances, and you still managed to lay a foundation and get faster and put in the sort of training that put you in the ballpark for running around a 3-hour marathon. Like, that's really, really good. But now what you can do is spend some time really backing off the running and really solidifying that foundation and building not just a stable foundation, but building strength on top of that. And that's what I focused on going to Pittsburgh. And because I used to have kind of like a magic workout sort of theory that if I had like an ache somewhere, I was like, well, if I find just like the one exercise, it'll fix everything. And instead, I was just really consistent with the range of exercises that focused on really my full body. And I found that that got me as ready as I could be for Pittsburgh. And I felt the difference when I ran Pittsburgh. Now, fast forward to my Boston training this year. 7 weeks out, I start dealing with some phantom hip pain. I don't even know where it came from, but I start dealing with it. It really made me feel unsure of my running for about 5 or 6 weeks. And I went back into the whole, like, if I find that one exercise, it'll fix everything. And you know what? It didn't work. I obviously got through and I had a great race. But one of the things that I wrote as being like a bad part of my cycle was I got out of the just laying down consistent strength work. And I started chasing that one perfect exercise. And the truth is that I don't feel as solid today as I felt a year ago. So that is the number one thing I've put on my schedule for the upcoming training cycle is just get back to consistently strength training. Don't chase the magic workout. Don't try to do too much. Get back to what you know works. And it's that consistency, not doing too much, but just being consistent with something that you know works. And I think that's where having that kind of a bigger picture view and being honest about what that bigger picture has done for you keeps runners from going too far off into that other direction where it's like, I've got to do more. I've got to push more. I've got to be more. A lot of times it's just, you have to just be consistent. Consistency compounds.
100%. I think that's good stuff. So yeah, don't beat yourself up.
No.
Just stay consistent, stay the course, just keep laying bricks. There's no shortcut to laying bricks. So yeah, I think that's a good place for us to kind of wind this down.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's next, but I do know that, it's going to be good. And I think it's easy to, having missed the result on Sunday, I think it's easy to go, well, Erie's not going to happen, cause I got big,
yeah.
I got big sights there. Like, but I'm not in that. Like I'm ready. I'm still ready to do work.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked back almost every day since I've got back from Boston. I've gone through and looked at every picture I took while I was there.
I do the same thing still.
I mean, boy, the moment I arrived on Boylston is still the lock screen on my phone.
Yeah.
Like I took that picture. That's the one that I talked about on the recap where I was like, Erica turned around, saw me take a picture and have a moment. That's right where I was when that happened. And she's like, "Ooh, I love this." And that, that stays there. That motivation is still there to get there to race.
Right.
And, well, okay. To get there to run. I ain't racing. If I get there next year, I am not racing. I got my plan set. My motivation is there. I'm ready for Erie. It was a rough weekend last weekend, but I know what it was, and I'm ready for more. So the sights, and just got to adjust the sights. So, but good stuff. All right. Well, I guess that's it.
Yeah.
The Browns just drafted a Buckeye.
Yeah, and they never do that. So I'm pretty thrilled. And DeJuan Jones is a mountain of a man.
Yeah, he's not very good, though. For how big that dude is, like, you're drafting. We're not going to talk about football.
No.
All right, we're good. We're going in this. Because I could just go off forever about how that dude is just not very good for how big he is. But you draft him off how big he is. So, yeah. Well, all right. That's it. It's the weather. Please, God, let the weather turn. I'm ready for summer. We're almost there.
Have you looked at Monday and Tuesday yet?
No.
It's not turning quite yet.
Yeah, I know.
Next weekend will be good, but Monday and Tuesday, not so much.
I know. We're getting there.
It's my fault.
It's like
my winter coat away.
I'm just going to. It's May. This episode's published in May. And I know good things happen in May with the weather.
Eventually. At some point.
Eventually. So hot weather is going to be here before we know it. And I can't wait to rip my shirt off and, or in the words of Nate Perez, take my top off and go run around real fast.
Hot Andrew Summer.
And yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be good. It's gonna be good shit. Yeah, the best is when I'm wearing my short shorts and all the high school girls are out playing soccer, and it's like, oh shit, I look so creepy right now. It's so awkward.
The downsides of getting older.
I know. And I'm bald. So it's like, yeah, no, that dude's like old as fuck.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. I fear if I wasn't bald, I would just be gray, so it'd still be obvious. That's why I wear a hat.
I got the gray in the beard here, man.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well, fuck.
We should have edited it 5 minutes ago.
All right, well, I'm going to go take my prune juice and eat some bran, maybe lay down and take a nap. That actually sounds amazing.
It really does. That's how you know we're getting old.
Well, it's the weather today, too, because we're recording this on Saturday. It's all dreary.
It's gray. And, ugh.
Yeah. I was outside for soccer. So, yeah, I'm supposed to run, but I don't know if I'm going to. All right. Well, hey, everybody. Summer's coming. Take those tops off and enjoy those miles, everybody.
I love my log.